Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better on this week's episodes. In the red corner, Sean Connery is in a bad mood. His wife has run off with their kid, his team of space marshals are a bunch of double-crossing no-goodniks, and the frontier mining colony he's in charge of is full of people going mad from illegal drugs. Time to clean this place up using a shotgun on a pressurized space station. From 1981... we're talking Outland.
I got nothing more on that incident in the mine yesterday. It looks like some guy just went wacko.
It happens here.
How often?
I don't know. It just happens here.
Why?
I'm not a psychiatrist. I can't tell you why. Some people just can't take it here after a while.
What's that guy think he's doing?
No way it could have been homicide. Had to have been a suicide.
28 in the last 6 months.
Did you do autopsy?
No.
Then how do you know it was a suicide? There's no other explanation.
While in the blue corner, what happens when your sci-fi TV show Firefly gets canned? Well, you take your cast, get a budget together, and turn the whole thing into an epic universe-spanning space western. As Captain Mal and his crew uncover a mystery of cannibal humans and genetic experimentation while competing for who can deliver the funniest one-liners. From 2005, it's Serenity.
I'm taking your sister under my protection here.
The only people she's a threat to is us on this boat.
Where are you hiding, little girl?
The Alliance wanted the reason they shouldn't have sent an assassin.
Every minute you keep River Tam from me, more people will die. This is your fault.
I don't murder children.
I do.
So what connects these two films and which one does it better? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
The Kraken.
Hello, Clash Butters. I might just kick your nasty ass all over this room. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Chris Tilley.
I've encrypted. That's in my notes. What a thing to say. Who's got a nasty ass? And she's an older lady. Don't talk to people like that. Oh. It's manners, actually, Sean Connery. Just manners.
Anyone would think I chose that as the first quote on purpose. Thought you might have a reaction to that. You're a nasty ass. how are you both? And also, Chris is back!
Yay! It's good to see your lovely little faces.
Thanks, yes, Chris.
She's back again, again. Tilly's back. Tell a friend. Vicky, Tilly's back.
I know.
Right then, that's the excitement of Chris being back. done with. So, big news before we get into this show. We have, if you follow us on Twitter, you will already know this news. If you don't, then you should. We're at ClashPod on Twitter. And this is one of the reasons you should follow us, so we can tell you things like this. We have our very first live show coming up. The first ever ClashPod Live. So therefore, certainly the last ever ClashPod Live at the London Podcast Festival on September the 4th. We're a late show, which is good.
Hey, that's fine.
It's
grown-ups.
Yeah.
Bit of blue.
You think? A little bit naughty. 9:30 p.m. We go on stage. Now, obviously, we understand a lot of you don't live in London, but if you do, or if you're willing to make the trip, we would bloody love to see you there. Come along. It's going to be great. We'll be giving out more information as and when
we've decided.
Let's pretend we know what we're doing. Oh, stuff like this on the night is exactly what's going to scupper us.
Yeah, come on. We're not expecting people to buy tickets or something we haven't decided upon yet, would we? Don't say that.
Yeah. So do not go to the London Podcast Festival website and buy tickets, but do, because we really do know what's going on. It's very exciting, but we are, let's say, fine-tuning it at the moment. We're going to the pub straight after this show to discuss.
I think we know what the films are. It's just, are we sure?
One of them we are definitely sure of, because you and I are going to be doing something very special that I told you we're going to do.
All right. Yeah, all right. We do know what the films are then.
All right.
Mystery.
You say mystery. I say being left out of the loop.
Trust me, when you find out what it is, you are going to be glad you're not doing it.
Okay. Oh, you will have time to learn it if you do want to do it. So
no, I don't know.
Why do you think I've been working out? Right then, let's crack on with this wonderful pairing, because these were my choices this week. Outland versus Serenity. Why? Because I've been talking about doing Outland for a very long time. And while Chris, I think, didn't actually think I'd ever actually pick it, he thought it was just one of my empty promises.
Yep.
One of those threats that I make.
Yep.
He was away, so I thought, what better time to slip in another Peter Hyams joint onto the show. And here we are. We are doing Outland then, because it's a space western. I thought, what is another great space western to talk about? And that is, of course, Serenity. And also, I didn't want to break our accidental Jerry Goldsmith marathon. Mm. This is episode 27 in a row, which has featured a Jerry Goldsmith score. So those are my reasons. And the clue I gave last week was the return of the space cowboy.
That's a very good clue.
It's a good clue.
Yeah, very good.
I thought you'd like that.
Yeah, I was really impressed.
I wish he'd been in the room to appreciate that. Yeah, that was my clue. Chris followed that up on Twitter with...
Yeah, better than my clue. My clue was Otis in Outer.
Yeah, it's all right. It's an unusual circumstance where my clue is better.
But... I like the idea that people had to look up what an Otis was.
What is it?
Because you should have looked it up. It's a Western. Western is called an Otis.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I looked it up.
Western movie. Mm-hmm.
So we are on Twitter at ClashPod, also Instagram at ClashPod, where some wonderful guests has kicked open the doors of the Space Saloon. Drunk Jim Official says, if it's not Spaceballs versus Serenity, there will be harsh, harsh words. We should do Spaceballs at some point. Maybe when they release the sequel, Spaceballs 2, The Search for More Money. I don't know when that will be. When will then be now? Soon. Good, good. Tim Wilkins says, Outland versus Battle Beyond the Stars. I believe Chris has plans for Battle Beyond the Stars, don't you?
No.
Oh, that would be a good one then.
Definitely not. It's the Star Wars knockoff.
Yeah.
We could do it with Star Wars. It would just be an odd week, I think.
All right. I thought you had plans for it. Syrian says, Dune versus Outland. Morph Holland says, Serenity versus Cowboys and Aliens. But congratulations to our only correct guest this week, Danny Baker. Your prize is this, the theme tune to the greatest space western TV show ever created.
And one day, a lawman appeared with powers of hawk, wolf, puma, and bear. Protector of peace, mystic man from afar. Champion of justice, mortal brave star.
Sing it.
Eyes of the hawk, ears of the wolf.
Star.
Strength of the bear, speed of the
puma.
Why did that just happen?
It's a space western cartoon. Do you not remember Brave Star?
Not really, no.
I do.
Yeah?
I remember it now you've done that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Speed of the puma. Not a puma, a puma. Great, I'm glad I did that. So let's do the connections. What do you got?
Characters called Shepherd.
Oh, shit. Good
one. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Nice. Very nice.
Cracking. I mean, I haven't got many this week.
All right. Frontier Space Towns.
CCTV is in your bar.
Yeah, to piggyback that, a lot of people watching monitors a lot.
Yeah. A lot.
Yeah, Mr. Universe and Connery spends an inordinate amount of time watching monitors.
Yeah, Zoom.
Yeah.
Space saloons, weapons you don't normally see in sci-fi. Mm-hmm. Shotguns on a space station, for example, and a samurai sword.
Mm-hmm. Mm. The only thing I wrote down was drugs used to control people.
Yes.
It's quite literal in Serenity, and then it's more subtle in Outland what they're doing. Yeah. But it's there.
Organisations trying to improve people using drugs with disastrous results. Got that. Well, that'll do us then.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get into this. On Thursday, Chris is going to be in a serene state of mind as he takes us through Serenity, which means today, Vicky is going to kick our nasty ass all over this room. V takes on a journey.
On the planet of Lo, no wait, Io, God, I always get that wrong. I wish there was a caption. Oh wait, here's a caption. Oh, and another, okay, so titanium mining, 70 hours to a space station, a 6 gravity, 1 shuttle a week. Oh, that is a lot of information to get across in a caption. There must be a more exciting way. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, something's happening. Whoa, wait, a lot of talk about mining. Oh, here we go, spiders! With an apparent spate of suicides on a grimy mining outpost, newly assigned US Marshal William O'Neill doesn't really notice. But then his wife leaves him and he suddenly gets all moody about everything and smells a rat. The workers are drugged up to their freaking eyeballs on company-sourced amphetamine to up their productivity before the drug fries their tiny minds. O'Neill just isn't having it for reasons he can't really explain, but then encouraged by a rewarding friendship with the ship's washed-up doctor, who's a really memorable character because she was written as a man and cast as a woman, and that's how you write well-rounded women, is you just write them like you would a man. O'Neill can explain his motivations, especially when his boss sends two hitmen to finish him off. He just wants to find out who he is. Is he too good for this place or not? Is he consorting with lowlifes or is he just a lowlife? Which is something I absolutely 100% empathise with. But O'Neill is a hero and now he's off home to Earth, confirmed by yet another caption to his posh wife and a son you'd really rather ditch. Seriously, that child is terrifying.
Excellent.
Io is a moon, not a planet, though.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Third moon of Jupiter.
Mm, there you go.
It's a Jovian moon. I know that now.
Yeah, and it's clearly in there. Like, let's get the alien jokes out of the way because
I've got a lot about that. Actually,
all right, I'll let you do it.
It's in my background. There's some very funny quotes from Peter Hyams about Alien. He's basically never seen it, so.
But the Io thing is clearly in there to make us go, ooh, 2001 was good. Like, yeah. You could set it on any moon, on any planet, and they're like, Io, definitely, because people go, it was something in 2001, that great, great sci-fi movie.
Yeah. Now, I'd never seen this film, but I'd also never even heard of it until you mentioned it. Mm. But I believe that's not the case for you.
Weirdly, I only discovered it about two and a half years ago, and I watched it, and I very much enjoyed it. Mm. I had some wine, but there you go. And yeah,
you don't have to say that anymore. That's just a given that you will have had some wine if you've watched the film.
I prefer to say it. It's part of my therapy. Now, I did not I did not know about this film as a kid. Like, and it really surprises me because this is exactly the kind of movie that I would have gone out of my way to see as a teenager. And I'm just surprised that it completely went under my radar. So I hadn't heard of it either.
No. What about you?
First time watch.
Oh, yeah, I forgot you said that. That's exciting because that doesn't happen very often.
I know. I don't know when it's happened. I can't remember the last time on this show. I was aware of it growing up, but I kept reading High Noon in Space and that wasn't exciting enough for me. So I never got around to watching it. So, yeah, it was exciting to have a first time viewing on this show.
Wow.
Brilliant.
Is this actually the first time? This might be the first time.
I don't think
time.
It's the first time, but I'd forgotten how I don't like having to make notes the first time I watch a film, though. I'd much prefer it's a film I've seen before.
It's very hard. Welcome to my world. Yeah,
sorry. Sorry.
Okay, well, let's talk about the background. So it was written and directed by friend of the show. I think Peter Hyams gets too much of a bite at this apple, if I'm being honest.
Hey.
He's not that good.
Yeah, what have we done? The Relic?
The Relic.
That was another...
Oh, no, Stay Tuned. Fair enough. Fucking awesome.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, what's the other one?
I think
End of Days. That's
end
a piece of shit.
End of Days is shit, yeah.
Yeah, the Relic, Stay Tuned, and End of Days might be his three worst films.
He certainly thinks so, sort of, at the time when he made this. He thinks this is exceptional.
Ooh, we need to do a Sound of Thunder, but carry on.
So at this point in his career, so it's 1981, he really wanted to do a Western. But Hollywood, at this point in his career, was much, much keener on sci-fi than a Western. you could say because of the success of Alien, which kind of took everyone a bit by surprise. So he kind of has his cake and eats it by doing High Noon in space. Discuss. Put a pin in that. We'll come back to that. He wanted to make a movie, he says, that was set in the future, but use the future as a location rather than the sole subject of the movie, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So the focus would not be on hardware. It would not be a film, I'm quoting, about serial dogfights near Mars or one where a monster devours a city, saying the future is not Lucite domes where people glide back and forth wearing jumpsuits. The only consideration was the performing of a task when he's talking about the sets of Outland. Function is the only criterion. Much like, some would argue, Alien. So you've got blue-collar workers, a sort of merciless CEO, like pushing people to do stuff they might not want to do, and what has been described as, by lots of people, a kind of lived-in look, the used universe aesthetic. But Peter Hyams certainly doesn't think that's true.
Does he not?
Saying, no, he said, no. He told me,
no. No.
This was in Starlog magazine. I love Starlog magazine. I was not influenced by Alien at all. This is a very dissimilar movie. Alien did not really focus on the characters. No, that's not true. This movie is about a bunch of people that I think you get to see sides of that you don't ordinarily get to see in films.
Yep, Alien does it.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. I mean, I understand what you're saying.
A Machiavellian company.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing is, if you don't want people to be suspicious, just say, yeah, definitely. You know, we love Alien and...
Maybe don't have the title Outland appear in exactly the same way that Alien appears at the start of your movie.
Now, I only read this other rumour once, and so I can't substantiate it, but it's very funny, that apparently on the design office there was a sign that read, make this film look like Alien. I really hope that's true. But also the two films, they share a lot of below-the-line staff, most notably for this podcast, Jerry Goldsmith.
Oh, yeah.
He's good.
Yeah, he's really, really good at what he does. So another source for Outland, you could say it's a remake, it's inspired by, it's indebted to, is High Noon, obviously. But there is a lot that's different until you get to the third act. The core being like morality and, you know, who are you if you don't stand up for your own principles and things like that. And it's a question of duty, over self-preservation and all the rest of it. And obviously, if you want to find the new next frontier, space or a moon or whatever makes perfect sense.
On paper, it's a great idea.
Yeah, it's a really good idea.
And it's actually a plot. I mean, as you said, High Noon is the last half hour. The rest of the film is nothing like High Noon at all.
No.
But it is like a lot of films that followed it. Like that drug plot I've seen in so many films. I was trying to think of obvious ones. Alien Nation does it. Zootropolis has a very similar plot to this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because Zootropolis is a drug movie, but it's packaged for children.
Mm.
But yeah, this is one of the first times I think I ever saw that plot, though, of this drug being used on people and having to track it down like a police procedural almost.
Yes.
I was gonna give my hand away there.
Oi.
I'll shut up.
Whoa. First day back.
I'm out of practice.
Yeah.
So casting, when Peter Hyams was writing it, he was thinking of Sean Connery, but he was also thinking of Paul Newman and people like Gene Hackman, saying you don't think of the Robert De Niro's and Al Pacino's because obviously this is 1981. They're not grown up enough. You want a grown man for that role. Like, again, a sort of lived-in look. So speaking of men, when Peter Hyams was writing Dr. Lazarus, and a big, big minus point there for calling Dr. Lazarus, like I can't bear it.
I thought you were doing a joke. Was the character actually written as a man?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Peter Hyams wrote Dr. Lazarus as a man and then said, I just decided to sit down and change it to a woman without changing the dialogue or the attitudes, which I love, obviously, but it's so disappointing that you see a woman on screen, you're like, wow, she seems so well-rounded. And it's because, yeah, no, she actually was a dude before, but we just literally changed the name and that's it. And I'm not criticising that.
So
I'm just criticising when a man sits down to write a woman.
It would have been a totally different character.
It would have been a shit character.
Right.
But when you write them as a man, it's not like you watch Dr. Lazarus and you're like, there's no way a woman could be like this. You're just like, oh, she's great. She's fun. And the way to do that is to write a man and then cast a woman. And that's obviously a little bit dispiriting. Just write, just whatever.
Do you think the line, literally the line, I'm going to kick your nasty ass.
I think that probably is from that, yeah.
Over this room, which it plays better. It's less uncomfortable if the character was a man.
Mm-hmm.
It is less uncomfortable because the power dynamic between a man and a woman and all the rest of it. But also, I do think there's something about if Dr. Steinberger, no, Dr. Lazarus, sorry, I'm getting confused with the actual actor. If that had still been an older man, is that still all right to say? I don't know. It's just a very odd line as well, because also it seems to come a little bit out of nowhere as well. Like he's doing some sort of low level sleuthing, and then he just threatens her with violence. It could be threatening anyone with violence. It still might seem a bit off.
Well, it's because she's being a little. She's not just doing exactly what he wants when he wants it. Because it's right at the start. It's one of the first. It's their first meeting. He actually says that to her. They haven't even got to know each other at this point. But saying that, I mean, we're going to talk about it. But I like the progression of their relationship.
Me too. Mm. Yeah. Me too.
He frames it as a Marshall joke though, and I think they could have come with a funnier.
Yeah, that's something that Marshall say. Yeah.
But Frances Sternhagen is the actress you're talking about.
Thank you. Yes, Frances Sternhagen. And she, I mean, and obviously with Ripley having been written as a man, the parallels are there also. So I haven't got much more. I mean, there's a lot if you want to read Starlog magazine from 1981, which I recommend. Hmm. Peter Hyams loves this film, saying, "By leaps and bounds, it's my best work by so much that it is embarrassing," which is a direct quote.
Can I also say, I said earlier that we've done his worst films. We haven't, because he did A Sound of Thunder.
Yeah, that's what I said. It's a great film. I mean, no, it's not. I don't know why I said that. Sometimes I dig myself a hole by just saying stupid things. A lot. Yes.
Really?
Yeah. That's, okay. Even
oh,
I.
Come on.
That's your thing.
Even I know A Sound of. I just want to be clear. I know A Sound of Thunder is a terrible piece of shit.
So you'll be picking it for your next choice.
Definitely.
But it didn't do very well. And it has been. I mean, there's so much on the internet about how it deserves a bit more of a sort of a reappraising.
Which we're doing.
Which we are doing. And because it got a bit buried, it just didn't take off in the way that people thought it would. And it is curious as to why. You know, it's not great. It's not that bad. I just, you know, I enjoyed it. I did enjoy it.
It's transportative. I always use that word. Do you know what? I looked it up the other day. It's not a word. It transports you to the location, and it feels very claustrophobic when you're on there. It does that thing that it intends to do, like Alien, which is you feel like, oh my God, I feel trapped on this space station. This mining
colony. Yeah, everyone's very crowded in. The miniature stuff all looks amazing. The fucking captions are like, oh, sorry. Do you know, should we talk about the film?
Yeah. Right.
So the captions, they go on forever, don't
Man!
They? And it's so much irrelevant information as well. It's information that you do not need to enjoy the film.
I tell you what, it's a really good week to do this, the like-for-like comparison of the opening scenes, because what happened to your instructional video, like in Serenity, which does it fucking awesomely, which is like a dream sequence becomes a video, becomes whatever. That's amazing. And you can get away with, we're on a shuttle, especially because Sean Connery's character is new to the thing. Why not go with him? And he gets played a video that says, "Welcome to Law," joke. "Welcome to IO. Here is all the facts you need to know." Like, it just goes on forever.
I do like the fact you made that joke, because they do actually, within the text, they even go, "pronounced IO."
Yeah. Just in case.
Who's this text for? This is literally, this is for you, the audience. Just don't call it low.
Yeah.
But why do we need to know how to pronounce it? We're not in the film.
It's ridiculous. It's like there's so many personnel on here. The security are these marshals. We're 70 hours from the nearest space station. Dinner tonight will be roast beef.
I think it's a shame, because the first 5 minutes of a film is when your audience is just a sponge and they want to be told stuff and they're so excited, and you just ruin all that enthusiasm.
Yeah, I mean, I like a scene setter and I like a bit of world building, but I was like, I think, I don't know whether it's because obviously you're making notes and you're going, is this important? Do I need to retain this information?
Yeah, your brain is working
overtime. I typed it all out and then deleted most of it.
Yeah. And it's such a shame, because you will not get your audience back again once you've let them down like that.
I left the room and didn't come back. I don't know what happens after this.
It's a lot like High Noon.
So then we very quickly established this is the miners mining, what is it, titanium?
Yeah.
But the point is, it's grimy work, it's dirty work. The technology isn't really, there have been advances in technology, but people are still working with their hands and things like that. Like, there aren't robots doing the job for you. And there's a lot of shop talk. Let's talk about shop stewards. So you instantly understand that there are union issues and labour issues, and it's not maybe such like a happy place to work.
It made me think of Amazon, all the trouble that Amazon's having at the moment, but people being overworked and understaffed. I thought it was quite relevant to the world we're in right now.
Because nothing ever changes.
Mm-hmm. I did wonder about Todd, the guy who sees the space spiders.
Yeah.
I mean,
really hate spiders.
What sort of practical joker must he be that when he's there screaming, going, "Oh God, spiders inside my suit, help me!" And his mates go, "Oh, fucking Todd.
Pack it
in." Cliff from Cheers.
He's messing about. "God, I'm gonna die!"
And how much must you hate spiders, though? Because you all know, if you pull on that pipe, then your head's going to explode. But he does. So this is very important. I mean, I don't want to moan about the shotguns, because it's cool. Like, but the pressure here will kill you, kind of thing. Like, so important.
It points out the pressure at the start, going, this is probably how a lot of people are going to die in this.
Yeah.
Now, shotguns.
Yeah. So, Spider-Man pulls on the thing. And then pow, his head blows up. And that's cool. That's fun. I enjoyed mm-hmm. that, obviously.
Yeah.
So we meet Sean Connery, who is Marshal William O'Neill.
Who literally has a blue collar.
He literally, that's such a good point, yeah.
I really don't like his outfit. It really bothers me. Like, he doesn't look cool. I mean, I understand it's that aesthetic with the sneakers, you know, comfy shoes. It works.
Do you want him dressed more like a cowboy, do you think?
I just want him to look a bit cooler, a bit meaner. I think maybe if his suit was black, it's just that royal blue that he's wearing.
Yeah, okay. All right, fair enough. Yeah. I mean, I didn't notice, to be honest. It's just him, isn't it? It's so hard to look past Bond. That
the wig.
yeah, that's a shock, actually. You're right about that. So we meet Shepard, played by Peter Hoyle. And there's just a bit of exposition, which I enjoyed. People work hard here. Their productivity is off the charts. They play hard too, though, and they need a bit of room to let off steam.
Yeah, that's funny, isn't it? That whole thing where he's like, you know, we work hard, but we play hard.
It's like, a good scene.
Play hard how? You know, slashing up sex workers hard.
Yeah.
It's like, just let it go.
He's being very friendly and he's being very threatening at the same time.
Yeah.
It's a good performance from Boyle there.
Oh, he's fucking great in this whole thing.
I didn't understand, though. They make a point of saying that the marshal's been there for 2 weeks.
Yes.
How come he hasn't met his employers or any of his colleagues?
I thought took it to mean the place is so vast and it's so, they have these staff meetings. It's like a team meeting, isn't it? Like so infrequently because they're not really important that it's taken that long to sort of get it all together.
Okay.
The weird thing about this meeting is that it sets up a question, which is for the entire thing, you're watching it going, I'm not sure O'Neill, Sean Connery, is doing this for the right reasons. I think he's doing this because he feels like he had his ego dented by Shepard, by Boyle, in that room.
Yeah.
Like the whole thing feels like when he says to his other sergeant, he's like, carry on taking your money and turning the other way. But in Sean Connery's accent. And
that was
terrible. It's hit and miss.
It started really well.
It's hit and miss.
Yeah.
But he says all that. He's like, I just want Shepard. I'm just angry because he basically embarrassed me in my first team meeting.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do all of this because of that.
Yeah.
But it's his kids. His kids been snatched by his wife. Considering he's a lawman, so you've got to assume he has some investigatory ability.
Mm-hmm.
When she goes, yeah.
Oh, those tickets.
The message appears
for no one, darling.
Yeah, it's like some guy appears on the screen. It's got those tickets you're asking for that you definitely said you wanted. And she's like, two.
Darling.
I've just got two.
Darling. What did she say? They're for Janet from the bakery.
For Cleo, somebody. I just met them the other day in 2 weeks and I got them tickets on a shuttle. They're not for me. Bye-bye.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, I don't give a shit. I'm going to work. You cannot concentrate. Let's have a short break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I tried to think of something funny to say there, but I actually just couldn't. Right, here we are. So there's another apparent suicide as a worker turns themselves inside out, descending in a lift without a pressure suit. But it doesn't matter because bloody Carol, she's only gone and left him. So I think what's interesting, especially when we're talking about writing Dr. Lazarus as a man and then casting a woman, I'm admiring of that because I'll do anything to get a well-rounded female character on screen.
Mm.
But you do have to look at how it tracks with his other relationship with another woman. So if he's the sort of person that says, I'll kick your nasty ass all over this room, Carol is very clear that she fucking loves him, yeah? She loves him so much, and yet she's left him, but she still definitely loves him, and he's never done anything wrong, and it's not really his fault, it's basically her fault. And she's quite at pains to be like, I'm just such a bitch that I've left you, but...
It sort of balances out that message, though, because rather than say goodbye, she's left him a voicemail, for all intents and purposes, that goes, your job sucks, it's fucking awful here.
Yeah.
I'm leaving, I've got tickets on a shuttle, those two tickets, I fooled you, they were actually for me. I've taken our son, but I'm not going to invite you with us. And that message, she doesn't go, there is a third ticket. Why don't you come and join us? She just goes, you do you in that shithole.
Exactly. And I thought it was quite good. Like, there's a scene, there's a really good scene coming up with Peter Boyle when he's playing golf. And he says to him, you know, why do you think you always get posted to places like this? Like, he calls it like a toilet. And then you realise that Carol was right, because you're not actually sure if Carol's right or not. She's like, I hate this life. We're always somewhere shit. But you don't know that for a fact. So it was quite good when he was like, you, yeah, that confirms that she was right about that. But I did think it was interesting. It makes sense later, but there's a decision there about Carol definitely loves him. There's an open door there if he ever chooses to go back, rather than there are bumps in their relationship because of the lifestyle that he's put them on. Because their son's never seen Earth. It's like, that's such an interesting character. Like, could we not have spent a bit more time with him where he has these weird...
Thought he didn't like this
son. No, I mean, I see now why they didn't give him scenes, because towards the end it's like,
I love you, Daddy.
I think part of the issue with the son is I think he was dubbed.
Right.
And I think that just always, when a child is dubbed, it sets you off a little bit, and you can't quite... There's something frightening about it that you can't put your finger on.
I think the problem with the way O'Neill is with his wife, and the fact that she's a younger woman as well compared to Dr. Lazarus, it makes the whole nasty ass comment quite ageist as well. Yeah. Like, if he's saying that to her, not only because she's a woman, but because she's an older woman as well.
Yeah, that's what I think. Yeah, that's how it comes off. Mm. Yeah, and I just think if you're going to do the thing where you it's cool to go, we literally just cast a woman and we didn't change a single word. Like, that's great, but maybe just go through it just to be absolutely certain that it's all fine.
We didn't have time. We were trying to get like fucking alien.
Yeah, you see the sign on the door? We were trying to do that. I read a lot into Carol leaving him because I was searching for your classic, like, we're probably on about page 10 here. Like, what's going to kick him off into this journey? And I read that he's feeling despondent, he's feeling sad, and he's feeling thwarted by Carol leaving. Because that's when he's like, do you know what? Maybe these two deaths aren't just apparent sort of random suicides. That's, to me, he's like, I'm going to try and look a bit harder because Carol left him. No?
It's a weird one, isn't it? Because at the end, jumping ahead, he solves the deaths, doesn't finish his tour of duty, but that is enough for him to go, I'm done. I'm off. So there is, I guess you could read it as like, he's like, if I do this, then I can just leave.
Yeah, I don't know. So then Stephen Berkoff goes fucking apeshit on some drugs. Do they not have syringes in the future? What's that massive gun he uses to put drugs in his arm?
Question, who the fuck takes amphetamine before going to bed? What an idiot.
That's a good point.
He's getting into bed and he goes, probably tell you have some
what,
speed.
What will sort me out now? I tell you, I'm just feeling a little bit edgy. Bit of speed or sort me right out.
What is it called? I can't believe in this whole
thing. Oh my
God,
the whole thing, they're like polydrugs or something. Someone's the fact, PDE, fine, fuck it, that'll do.
I mean, why not give it a cool space name?
Yeah, give it a cool fun name.
It's like space jizz.
anything. Infinity, what, fuck it, doesn't matter.
Yeah, crank, I've done my crank.
Yeah. PDE, and it's like Sean Connery's forced to like shorten it down because Dr. Lara says it's ethanol. I don't fucking know. I'm not only a doctor.
Shut your nasty ass up.
I hated that bit. I mean, it's fine because it's the 80s, but she's like tapping away on the computer. She's like, how the fuck would I know how to do this? I'm only an alcoholic doctor.
She's good though. There's that line where she goes, I did good, didn't I, for a wreck? There's something wonderfully like self-deprecating about that. She's very aware of the fact that she's like, been posted out here. She says it as much,
maybe too many times. She's like, I need your approval. I mean, when she says to him later, because you do it in a different way, they exchange a bit of whatever and she's like, do you want to go and get drunk? And the way he says it, he's like, yeah.
The problem so is good. That's the scene you want to see, those two getting on it.
Oh,
they don't
that?
Ever show that. That would have been fucking great.
To see their, it would be so funny, see their drinking game, but they're like 20 years older than everyone else there and they're giving it all the talk and then they just passed out like after about four drinks.
She reminds me of David Warner's character in The Omen last week in that she's largely there to drive the plot forward. Mm. But like that character, I think her performance and this character are so good that I don't mind the exposition. Because she's so engaging, like David Warner was in that film.
Yeah.
I think they cast her really well.
No, she's great. She's great. There's, on the drinking front, though, there's a wonderful plan that I am going to use at some point, which is where Sergeant Montone, his sergeant, goes around to see him, to comfort him after his wife's left, and he walks in, and he takes a beer from the fridge.
Yeah.
And then says, on my second tour, my wife left me with a computer programmer. Which is sort of like, he's like, well, she hasn't left me. it's sort of like he says absolutely the worst thing. Sean Connery goes, I'd like to be on my own. And so he goes, cool. And walks out with the beer.
Oh, I see.
What a plan. Yeah. You go in.
What a legend.
You go in on the premise of offering a shoulder to cry on, yeah. Help yourself to a beer, say the wrong thing, get asked to leave, beer without having to listen to some bullshit.
You don't think the wrong thing is like, oh, has your wife left you? So the hookers here are nice. Like, I'm not sure that's quite, it's like, oh, okay, thank you. Maybe I'm a bit heartbroken, but that's good to know.
What does he say? I'm sure they are. I think he does. I'm sure they are.
I'm sure they are.
I've got a thing going with Dr. Lazarus.
So, yeah, where are we up to? So, the PDE, Sean Connery does very quickly believe it's a conspiracy right from the top, which I didn't quite buy. So they realise that the drugs are like brought in by the company or sanctioned by the company or something, something, something. And Sean Connery puts it together and is like, oh, to make them work harder. And he jumps from not thinking that to thinking that with no steps in between.
Do you not find that the biggest problem with this film is that about 24 minutes in, you know exactly the entire plot? There are very few surprises.
But I wonder if that's because we've seen this plot play out in so many films and TV shows, whereas I think this is one of the first times it was actually done.
Okay. Okay. I'd seen it before, so maybe that was it.
It's a smart plan by the corporation, though, isn't it? Because they're paying these workers, and then the workers are giving them the money back by buying the drugs that they're supplying.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful, vicious circle. You mentioned, though, the golfing scene when our man talks to Shepard. Did you clock what film nicked that we've done previously on the podcast when he's putting? It's really obvious steal.
Total Recall.
No.
Oh.
Avatar. Giovanni Ribisi's putting, the face of the corporation, of the space corporation. James Cameron, I mean, it's obviously an homage, but he's literally taken it. To have a guy using one of those putting machines while having this conversation.
Yeah. That's so true. Yeah. I didn't spot that.
I fell out of love with the golf because I think in the 80s, it was golf was shorthand for arsehole. If you play golf, you're an arsehole. And I understand the juxtaposition between wide open spaces and this very claustrophobic mining community. But I just wished it wasn't golf. It just annoyed me that it was golf. I wished it was I don't know. He was doing parkour or just something I'd never seen before. Just you've got a man, a corporate man, a company man playing golf. And you're like, you're a wanker because it's that lazy shorthand for that.
Yeah, it was 1981. Parkour didn't exist.
Of course it existed. You didn't know about it.
I don't think it did.
What, no, jumping from one thing to another didn't exist in the 80s?
Parkour. I don't think parkour
was
a thing.
All right, fine. We'll look that up later.
Yeah, yeah. It was invented in the 90s.
No, jumping from one thing to another has always been a thing.
That's not parkour. Jumping from... There's a big difference between what you just said and parkour.
You know? It's jumping from one thing to another. You think parkour was invented but with the Bourne identity? And it wasn't, or something.
It was in France. It was invented in Paris.
Yeah, probably a really long time ago.
The 1990s, like 25, 30 years ago.
You're wrong on this one. I mean, it's you pick your fights, but this isn't one of them.
I can't get out of this now. No. I don't know what to do.
No, if your argument is someone jumping from one thing to another.
Which it is.
Parkour.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Right.
I'm just saying, maybe its roots go back further. Let's look at France's colonial past, shall we?
Is this because I said earlier that I sometimes say stupid things? You're now in competition with me.
Parkour is a type of movement that was established in France
in 1988. Established.
Oh, I heard 80.
I was 2 years out.
So I think we all win. Can we move on?
Whatever helps you sleep at night.
Thank you. So we, as the plot establishes, after we've been to a bit of a sexy bar, so Montoni's in on it, but O'Neill doesn't care about that. Like you said, he just wants Shepard. And they play sort of futuristic squash. And the script here tries to show you, which I do agree with and I buy, that the reason for O'Neill, what we do is we don't talk about his motivation. He doesn't say to Montone, I want to do this because... What Montone says to him is, here are all the reasons you shouldn't do this because Shepard is a big deal and all the rest of it. So that's the script sort of laying down, this is why you shouldn't do it rather than why you will. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Which is a little bit of irksome at the time, but it pays off later. There is a really satisfying scene where Sean Connery explains why he's going to do the things he does. So that was fine.
When he's bringing up the suspect's photos, did you not find that amusing? That in this future world,
so
you can have a live video call
yeah.
with a space station 70 hours away by shuttle, crystal clear.
Yeah.
But you want to bring up some photos of suspects.
No, that's a dot matrix.
ZX Spectrum.
Yeah.
It's like,
it's so stupid.
It's a dial-up modem. It goes, and you're like, can you even recognise them from that photo?
He's like, show me the likeness. And it's like, oh, I can't show you an actual photo. No, we can't do that. But we can show you the likeness of Spota.
One of them, those photos that comes up, the name Spota. Mm. And that's a name that's in most of Peter Hyams' films because it's his wife's maiden name.
Oh, that's nice.
A little tribute to the missus.
That's great.
That's really nice. So yeah,
I mean, he is a terrible person in this.
Well, that's true. Oh,
why not? Why not Dr. Spota?
He ends up in a suspended prison, and he ends up inside out as well.
Mm.
I love that zero G prison thing, though. That's wicked. Like just little touches like that.
I see it works because he says most people go mad eventually because of the weightlessness, because you can't feel the ground. So after, because I was sort of like, well, you just sort of hang in there. It doesn't feel that bad. But the idea there
forever, Yeah, you'd go mental. So we've talked about this earlier, but there's a brilliant scene there where he goes to confront Shepard about what's going on. The reason why it's so good is because straight away, Shepard's like, yeah, how much money do you want? Like, no fucking around, which is admirable. It's fun. It throws you off balance. You're expecting a little bit of like, what, who, me? No, never kind of thing. And he's just like, yeah, absolutely. This is how it works. And the line, like, you know, I'm a sucker for a nice bit of dialogue, but when he's like, my hookers are clean, the booze isn't watered here. So he's saying how good it is, Shepard is. And Sean Connery says, it sounds nice. And he says, nothing here is wonderful, but it works. That's enough. It's like, that's good. Mm. I like that. Because he just completely sums up why Sean Connery, he's offering him a way to accept what's in front of him. It's not perfect, but it's fine. It works here.
I mean, at that point, even without intending to, Sean Connery is, he's done himself proud as a dealer in terms of getting a bit more money.
Yeah,
the guy, Shepard's like, go on then, you've done it. How much? I'll up your fee. I would take the money at that point. I'm not lying. I'd have been like, yes, fine.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Because in High Noon, it's much cleaner in terms of, you're the sheriff, you're a good person, you're a proper hero. The town are populated by broadly like innocent people.
Mm.
So you kind of have to do the right thing.
Right.
But in this, he doesn't have to do the right thing because he's occupying a sort of...
But also in High Noon, the difference is the people are coming for him for something he's done in the past because he's the one that put them in prison. So he's got a connection to the people that are coming. Whereas this, it's kind of cut off from him, which is why he has this crisis, doesn't he, of he doesn't like the part that he's been given. He keeps using that word, his part, and he's going to find out if they were right or wrong to give him this part. So
it's weird, isn't it? Because the whole situation on the space station is the fact that the people who want to take drugs, take drugs. If you don't want to take the drugs, don't take the drugs. And also, I think after you've seen enough of your colleagues who are taking the drugs make their heads explode, you actively make your own decision, go, I'm probably going to pass on taking the speed before bed.
But they've not made that connection. And it's more about the fact the workers are being replaced by machines. And so they're taking this drug as well to give them the energy to work the longer hours.
I wish there was something in it about that. The drug is either the drug makes you work harder, but it's also very pleasurable and addictive because Dr. Lazarus is super clear. You take this drug, you work really hard. And then after 11 months, not 12 and not 10, your brain goes nuts and you will kill yourself. So for a worker that's there just to make money, there has to be something that would make you think, I'll push it right to 10 and a half months and then I'll stop taking it. But if it was very addictive or very pleasant, which was more obvious, because you only see Stephen Berkoff and he doesn't appear to be having a fantastic time. So it doesn't...
Oh, I don't know. That looks like a right laugh.
Yeah.
have you read The Scanner Darkly, the Philip K. Dick?
No.
But because the substance, there's a drug called Substance D in that, which I think this kind of rips off a little bit. This psychoactive drug that it produces this initial euphoria. And then after a while, you find out what the D stands for and it's despair and death, ultimately. And so I think it's a similar thing. But I think you're right. I mean...
That's some solid marketing. It's called Substance D. D? Yeah, just D. What does it stand for?
Well, there was A, B, and C, so it's just D now. Death. What? So anyway, we're into High Noon now because Shepard sends two people to come and kill Sean Connery because he's not fallen in line with this plan. He's destroyed some of the PDE, which was hidden in some beef, I think, or an animal.
Were you slightly disappointed when two guys... In what are they called? Gilets.
They look like Ray Mears.
And one of them's Hatchet Harry from Lockstock.
Yeah, it's P.H. Moriarty.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. You say Lockstock, I say Jaws 3. Okay. He's in Jaws 3. It's probably the most powerful relationship in Jaws 3. You remember Simon McCorkindale's character, the guy who gets eaten by the shark, and you see his point of view from inside the shark?
No one remembers it.
It's one of the most terrifying shots in Jaws 3. You're seeing his point of view and you see the shark's jaws. He's still alive, closing in front of it. It gave me freaking nightmares. Anyway,
you're a baby about sharks. Well,
his mate in it is a P.H. Moriarty, and when Simon McCorkindale dies, he's like, no, and you're like, oh, you totally loved him.
Oh,
it's really
nice.
Good.
Oh, okay.
But I'm also disappointed, and I guess this is because this was 10 years before Home Alone, but he's kind of, it looks like he's home alone in the place, doesn't it?
That's
it looks
notes.
Like he's setting up booby traps and stuff, and then
he
just really
isn't.
Yeah.
I was like, please set up a booby trap.
He did set up a booby trap. He put bombs on a corridor that P.H. Moriarty was going to walk into, and then
leads
him into
it.
Yeah,
but you don't see him being like sneaking around.
Yeah, I wanted him to put micro machines, exactly.
Yeah, that would have been brilliant. That's what I wanted.
It's quite good.
Glue, big cans of paint.
This predates a lot of those movies where you purposefully lead a villain down a series of doors and then seal them behind them to ensure that they're in the right place. Alien 3, I think, did this as well, where they're guiding the alien to a specific location. And they do that really well.
It is
so Alien 3 ripped off Outland. Interesting.
Definitely.
Did they have a sign on the door? Make this. I mean, the countdown for the men that are coming, it's good at first, but obviously it's the law of diminishing returns a bit. You're like 60 hours.
100%.
Hours.
So
yeah.
Funny.
100%.
Is it not cinema's greatest ticking clock when it first appears and it goes, 49 hours.
Yeah,
and
you're right. Like,
I am on the edge of my seat.
That's it, because High Noon kind of plays out in real time. Have you ever seen the film 3 O'Clock High that does High Noon? It's High Noon, but set in a high school where the bully's going to come and get him at 3 p.m. And it's the same plot, and it's brilliant, but you're right. You need it to play out in semi-real time for that to be a thing.
Well, 49 hours gives us plenty of time to watch O'Neill looking at some monitors, which he does.
He does. He talks to Carol. And she still loves him, and she's going to Earth, and won't he come? And I was ready to hate this because it's like, you have to explain yourself to your wife. And she's like, when you give me two-word answers, I know something's wrong. And he's like, I'm fine. So confirming. But then bloody poorly, the kid gets on the screen. You're like, fuck me. Like, I do get why you might not want to go with him.
Well, I got the vibe that his wife has finally come round to the idea of getting that third ticket, because she's like, Paul, he is fucking insane. I'm so scared of our child.
Hello,
get
Daddy.
Here now. Daddy, Mommy's not giving me everything I want.
His voice isn't his.
I love you, Daddy.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And do you see the look on his face? Yeah, I love you too.
Well, I wonder, because I think Sean Connery was obviously a fine actor, but he's very good for me. Like, you don't see him cry very often and all the rest of it. And he's really, really good in that scene. But he cannot be acting to the kid because it's too much. Like, he's like welling up and he's like, I love you, son. But there's no way it's Paulie there. There's must to be a real grown-up person like reading those lines, I believe. But I can't prove it. So anyway, he bursts into the bar and he's like,
can you not prove it? Can you not prove it? Okay.
What?
Nothing.
I don't get it.
It's just the way you went. There's definitely another person there, but I can't prove it.
Like, I just realised my whole life.
God damn it.
Oh my God, I can't prove any of this.
I'm out of moves. This is the end game.
Here, in this room, now? Anyway, so he bursts into the bar and he's like, you could do the impression. He says, I could use a little help. You could do that in his voice. But no one will help him.
Yeah, which is what most of High Noon is. It's him going around town trying to get help and everyone having a reason.
The great line is, where are all your men? And he goes, my men are shit.
I thought I'd misheard it because such a throw. Our men are shit.
Yeah, it's great.
I love that line, obviously. So then the killers are here and we're stalking the corridors. And to be honest, this is too drawn out for me. Like, it lost my interest a bit. It's
really?
Cool. Yeah, it's cool when they blow up the corridor and all the rest of it.
Yeah, you don't kill P.H. Moriarty first. You kill the guy that I couldn't pick out of a lineup.
No.
The other guy, it's like P.H. Moriarty, he's got an iconic look.
Yeah.
And like, he is the second guy you kill. You don't kill him first.
He hasn't made Jaws 3 or Lockstock yet, though. So
he's just an old one.
He's just a bloke.
And the greenhouse thing, I'm sorry, but that's just stupid. Because a hired hand gets distracted by a big rectangular shadow and shoots a fucking hole
well,
in the
not,
wall.
But he's like, not a hired hand. He's a trained assassin.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's... But what
even worse.
Shit. It's worse, yeah.
And also, we haven't seen the greenhouse at this point. This is the first time we see it. And also, this is where you... Like, for the entire movie, you've been going, surely shotguns in space are a bad idea. And it's like, and now we prove you right.
Yeah, because when Sean Connery goes to arrest Spota, he shoots the walls of the canteen and says, think about what you're about to do, as if to say, I will shoot you next. So he shoots a wall on purpose. Mm. So now I understand that maybe it's not an exterior wall and all the rest of it, but it seems like a very bolshy move, given that if your bullet goes through the wall, you will die. And also the assassin, what was his plan? Like, shoot Sean Connery and definitely don't miss. Because if you miss, you're both dead. Yeah. It's a stupid, stupid scene. And then he kills his new sergeant who tried to kill him. And he punches Shepard. And it's the film is saying, like, some sort of justice will be done. So either Shepard's bosses are going to come and kill him, or there'll be no more of this in this place from here on in. And so he tells his wife he's coming to join her to sleep with her for a year, but actually sleep, not sleep with her for a year, just with another caption. And then we're out. And yeah, the captain's annoying me.
She says regarding the flight home, we'll keep your ticket warm. You don't keep a ticket warm. You keep a seat warm on
the
flight.
So true.
You don't keep a ticket warm.
Whoever says, I'll keep your ticket warm? Paul is getting to her.
Bizarre.
She meant seat, but he stood right behind her. She's like, I'm just saying anything at this point.
Your ticket's warm, Daddy.
Peter Himes is getting to me with shit like that.
That's it.
Good for me, Chris.
All right, what was your best scene then, Alex?
Probably P.H. Moriarty's death, that whole sequence where they're luring him into the corridor, because it feels like something that has been set up and is going to pay off, because you've seen him planting the bombs. You're like, oh man, I want to see that guy go inside out. So P.H. Moriarty's death.
Lovely. What about you?
Can I have the scene where Lazarus and O'Neill get drunk that we don't get in the movie?
You can.
That's
what
in
do you
my
think
head.
They drink? Jaeger bombs. No.
She's a whiskey woman.
He's a stout man.
You know she's raided the drugs cabinet in the surgery.
She's like, why are you bothering with the liquid? Yeah. Just get yourself a glass of water. Sit down.
She's totally high on her own supply.
I really like the zero gravity prison, but that's not a scene. And I love the scene where Peter Boyle offers him money for his complicity straight away. But I think the best scene is when Dr. Lazarus and O'Neill are talking, like, they're in the squash court, so they're in the gym or whatever.
Yeah.
And he fully explains, like, what it is that he's doing, and does he belong in this hellhole, and who is he's just got to figure out, you know, what kind of man he is. And that worked for me. I thought it was really
powerful. And it kind of sums up the themes of the film, because the men on the space station are being replaced by machines. His wife is leaving him. His other guy's wife's leaving him. He's realizing that the job is just to look the other way. And it's all these people being emasculated, basically, on this space station. And so I think it does nicely sum up the themes in a really engaging scene.
Yeah. It's funny when Montan's like, my wife left me for a computer programmer, because it's the 80s. You're supposed to go, a computer programmer, they're dicks. But nowadays you're like, yeah,
that's
and?
Pretty cool.
Yeah, okay. A computer programmer, like. Your most valuable whatever, Chris.
Frances Sternhagen.
Yes.
I think she's great. And I was trying to figure out where I recognised her from.
Sex in the City.
She is
The Mist.
She is.
She in The Mist?
Yeah, she's The Mist. She's in The Mist.
She is.
The school teacher, I think. She's one of the, I'm sure she's one of the women in the.
In the supermarket.
In the supermarket.
Okay.
Because I got excited at the start when I saw Cliff from Cheers.
Yeah.
And then she's Cliff's mum in Cheers.
Oh, really?
So it was a really nice little connection there. And little fun little fact. For a brief time, Cliff from Cheers was the most financially successful actor of all time.
Right.
Toy Story.
Because he's in every Pixar movie.
Yeah.
And then Samuel L. Jackson's done him.
Ugh.
What about you?
Frances Sternhagen as Dr. Marion Lazarus. She's just great.
Yeah, she is amazing. I was going to give it to her because I wasn't going to give it to Sean Connery, because I just, as an actor, I do find him generally quite hard to connect with. Like, he's, apart from being Indiana Jones, actually. But like, then the scene where he explains everything, I did think was actually like quite phenomenal, like in terms of the acting. I suppose because I wasn't expecting it as well. Like, to me, he is, I mean, I know you love him in The Rock and stuff like that, but I don't know.
Welcome to The Rock.
The Untouchables, he's great.
That's true.
But yeah, I just think the performance really...
Oh, Highlander,
like,
he's fucking great.
Mm.
Oh, The Hunt for Red October.
He's not, I mean, he's fine. He's just quite hard.
Great.
The Man Who Would Be King, he's great.
Mm.
Oh, can I just have, I find him hard to connect with? Is that all right? Anyway, sorry.
Dragonheart.
He's literally just going through fucking IMDb.
Entrapment. He's so good in Entrapment.
Yeah. Sorry, that is true. That is a great film.
The bit where he goes under all
under
the lasers. He's fucking brilliant.
The bomb bit. Amazing. Anyway, I thought his performance...
The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Oh, please.
He's so good in it, though.
Really?
Yep.
Okay. Anyway, what would you change, Alex?
I think the guy who Connery fights at the end, who O'Neill fights in the spacesuit, should be Boyle. I get the idea that, you know, they're going to come and get him because he didn't sort his shit out on the station. But I just, like, the sergeant sort of turns up quite late, and yet you are told there's a man on the inside, and him standing there behind Dr. Lazarus, there's that moment where he just appears behind her and you're like, oh, he's going to kill her. And then he doesn't. He just sort of goes out to find Sean Connery. I just think that would be Boyle. I think you hate Boyle enough at this point because of how smug he is, that seeing him fall over the side of the space station would be a better payoff.
Yeah.
Well, better than him being punched over a table, because my issue is kind of similar. Like, the villain of the piece isn't intimidating. So I think your hitmen have to be scary or just not bumbling. And I think there's a real problem with the baddies in this film because they're just so ineffective that there's no threat there. And the film desperately needs it in that last third.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, you understand why films like this have scenes where you tail a suspect, because that is infinitely more interesting than watching them on a monitor.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
What's yours?
Two things. You cannot call the keeper of men Shepherd, and you cannot call a potentially sort of not concentrating doctor Lazarus. I just think that's, I mean, you do it in the script, like, I'm so clever, and then you do it again because it's crap. But yeah, it's the scene, it connects with Chris's change. Possibly because he's Bond, the hitmen are no threat whatsoever. So maybe, obviously, this diverts from High Noon, but why doesn't Shepherd, since his motivation is money and he knows that the miners also love money, they're not working, it's not, you know, it's not for the love of the job, it's for money. Why not offer them money to help the hitmen and sort of incentivize them to kill O'Neill also?
Good.
That's it.
Good stuff. We are done. That was Outland. You're welcome. Right then, are we doing a quiz this week, Chris?
Yeah,
of course, cool.
We are.
Love it.
So on Thursday, I'm talking about a movie based on a TV show. So the quiz is going to be about movies based on TV shows. What I'm going to do is give you the tagline and I want you to give me the name of the film.
Right.
The film.
Got you.
Although in almost all the cases,
the same.
It's the same. There's one that's slightly different. Okay, let's kick off with number one. Weird is relative.
Weird Science.
So it's a film based on a TV show.
Right, got you.
Weird. The Addams Family.
Correct!
Oh!
Very good. You figured it out. I could see your little brain working there.
Thank you, Chris.
All right. The ultimate disaster movie.
Bean!
Correct. Very good. I thought that was going to be a tricky one. There is no plan B.
Oh, I know this.
Oh. The A-Team.
Correct.
Oh, fuck off.
This is good. This is good. You guys are good at this. This summer, four boys become men.
It was not. No. Stand By Me wasn't ever a TV show, was
no.
it?
No. This is a British film.
Oh, The Inbetweeners.
Correct. Correct. This one's a weird one. The only thing getting blown tonight is their cover.
Oh, Spy. Jump Street. 21 Jump Street.
Correct.
Fuck you.
3-2. 3-2.
Sorry.
Unbelievable.
I'm so
you need
sorry.
This, Alex.
What I endure.
You need this, Alex.
This quiz every week.
She's angry, isn't she?
All right, no, I'm just going to bring it down a notch.
It's a very sweary episode, this.
Sorry.
Okay, I'll look at you, Alex, because you need this point.
Thanks.
We've been expecting you.
The X-Files?
An English film. It's a weird... The tagline is weird for the film. It's an English film that came out a couple of years ago and made a shit ton of money. And I doubt either of you have seen it.
Oh. We've been expecting you.
But my mum probably enjoyed it.
We've been expecting you. Calendar Girls.
Set in a big building. It's a period piece.
Oh, Downton Abbey.
Correct! The key wins!
Oh, no. Sorry, well played, Alex. Sorry for swearing at you.
Look at her. Look at how smug she is now.
Yeah, but no one can see it, so now you two just sound like our pals.
We got videos.
Congratulations, Victoria.
We've been expecting you is a weird tagline, isn't
it's
it, for
really
Downton Abbey?
It's creepy.
It sounds like horror.
Well, yeah. No, it's just like...
That's smug.
We've made
you
this movie.
You are going to watch
Of course
this.
You're going to watch it. Remember the TV show that you all fucking loved that we just like, you know, trotted out? Yeah, now you got a movie. Come in. Right then, that's that. So, next week, looking ahead, welcome back, Chris Tilley, and welcome back to Your Choices. What's your clue?
Next week, we will be trying to keep the wolf from the door, so to speak.
That is your clue for next week's pairing. We are trying to keep the wolf from the door, so to speak. So that's your clue. We'll be revealing what the films are on Thursday's episode, where we will also be letting Chris guide us through Serenity. Until then, please subscribe, rate, and indeed review us if you have the time. It's a great help, and check in with us on Twitter and Instagram, where we are at ClashPod. And don't forget, London Podcast Festival. And you can get tickets for our first ever live ClashPod show on September the 4th. Back on Thursday. Bye-bye.
This was a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.